All right, Pete, welcome back to the show. It's been a while since we did this, but we're ready to do our Super Bowl preview. We're a little bit late. I would have loved to get this out Wednesday, Thursday. I know you would have as well, but things got to us. We got a little busy, but hopefully we'll give our listeners a few hours at least on Sunday before game action starts to listen to our brief preview here. We just want to talk about a few keys to the game and then review some prop bets and then make our final predictions, which are sure to make at least one of us look stupid because I think we're going opposite ways on those. But we'll get to all that. Pete, how's your week been?
It's good. It's always good to be back with you, my friend. Ditto on getting this out when we did. Real life, man. It keeps getting in the way of us watching sports, which is seriously annoying. But especially here on the West Coast, it is weird on the West Coast. You know, especially with college basketball in full swing, if I'm not leaving work at 4 or 5 o'clock, I'm going to miss all of the early tips, hopefully catch a late game.
Right.
It's weird. It's weird out here in the West, but can't really complain with the Super Bowl on at 3:30 p.m. local here. So
yeah, lucky you. We have to start ours at 5:30, and that's even a little bit late for me because you know the broadcast is going to be drawn out. You know the halftime show is going to be one of the longer ones. So we're going to have we're going to be up later than I. Well, I don't normally go to bed that late anyway, but I don't want to be having football my entire evening. I'm going to have some reading time to wind down, things like that. You know,
sure.
Maybe some Netflix and chill.
So you know what? One of the first thing that could potentially be a problem for you going to bed early is how long the national anthem is going to take. And you know that is one of the funniest prop bets that you can find every year.
I remember talking about that last year. What's the prop bet? Have you seen the prop bet for this year?
Yeah. So what I'm pulling this year, one of the many hilarious prop bets that we should probably discuss here in the next few minutes is how long will it take for Gladys Knight to sing the U.S. national anthem? Over under is 1:50.
That I think that's exactly what it was last year, right? And they were
yes.
Yeah, I think who was it? Was it Pink who did it last year?
That is a great question.
Okay, I think it was Pink, and I think she was at like 1:55, so she was just over.
Yeah. I think they're going pretty conservative with both the national anthem and the halftime shows this year. Obviously, Adam Levine, who knows? I know there's a prop bet about him wearing a shirt or not wearing a shirt.
Or a hat.
But, you know,
I've never seen Adam Levine wear a hat.
The days of the wardrobe malfunctions during the Super Bowl not something Roger Goodell wants to experience again. So
what are the odds on that national anthem prop bet?
So it is just a money line with an over-under right there at 1:50. So, what I was seeing earlier is more people were putting money on the over, probably going closer to 2 minutes.
I would tend towards over. I mean, if you're an artist who's asked to do the national anthem, you're going to take your time in the spotlight, right? I mean, I would. I wouldn't zip through that. Dress it up a little bit. Take your time. 2 minutes at least.
And you think of these iconic national anthems, like I think of Whitney Houston in the early 90s, right after the Gulf War started. I mean, that I'm sure it only went for about 2:10, but I'm pretty sure it felt like about 8 minutes, and it was awesome.
Yeah.
And Gladys Knight, not known for being quick on the mic. So
true.
I would absolutely take the over there.
All right. I think it's a good recommendation. Well, should we talk about some keys to the game, Pete? Some key matchups maybe that we'll be watching or key players?
Yeah. Let's get right into it. What should we be watching for? What should the first matchup that you're really targeting here is we're looking at what's going to happen tomorrow night?
Yeah, so I think the first thing is the Rams defensive line versus the Patriots offensive line and Tom Brady. I'm not sure if you've seen this, but Tom Brady has yet to be sacked in the postseason.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it's not an incredible feat. I mean, I think Andrew Luck went something like 7 straight games this year without getting sacked. But it's something that only really good offensive lines can consistently do, protect their quarterback and make sure that he doesn't get knocked down with the ball in his hand. And the Patriots weren't really good at it all year. They were decent to good at it all year, but in the postseason, they've really shown up, and their offensive line coach has been able to scheme really effectively against the defenses they've faced. I think in this case, the difference is the Rams have a guy named Aaron Donald, who's probably the best pass rusher in all of football, and Sue,
agreed,
who they signed to that massive contract, or they didn't sign to a contract, but they traded. He's on a massive contract. He was originally in Miami. They traded for him, and now he's there on a deal in Los Angeles. And he's really shown up this postseason in a big way for the Rams. He was pretty quiet all year, but in the last two games that the Rams have played, he's really been making a lot of noise. So will Sue be able to get home if Donald's double teamed or vice versa? And I think a lot of the game will come down to how quickly they can get after Tom Brady. Tom Brady's been really quick to release the football all season. He's been around 2.6 seconds on average, which is quick to begin with. But this postseason, he's down to 2.42 seconds on average. Now, on the other hand, Aaron Donald's been beating been beating his blocks in within 2.5 seconds on 44% of dropbacks. So I think the matchup ingredients are there to have a really good, cat and mouse game with Aaron Donald chasing down Tom Brady. It's just a question of who's going to show up in a bigger way, the Pats offensive line or Aaron Donald, Sue, and the rest of the defensive crew for the Rams.
I think that's a great place to start out with. Obviously, Aaron Donald and Ndamukong Suh get all the attention there. Where I think this could also be interesting is how much the Patriots will probably have to double-team Aaron Donald to try to keep him from breaking through. Watch for Dante Fowler Jr. here in this game. Came over midseason. I think back to really what he did against the Cowboys there in the divisional round, where he had a very important run stuffing moments, and then also knocking Dak Prescott down on a huge third down late in that game. He had the hit on Drew Brees that forced that big interception in overtime in the NFC Championship. He's getting off the edge mainly. I think it's on the left side. I should check that. Mainly on the left side.
Yeah.
But he's made a lot of problems here, specifically in the playoffs, for being a midseason pickup for the Rams when that Rams defense was really, really hurting. Remember, right after that Chiefs game, in that incredible Chiefs game on Monday night, the Rams defense was kind of down and out. And I think the addition of Dante Fowler Jr. has been a big deal for them. And kind of building on this, you got to look at Wade Phillips. And I know he's old. I know he gets a lot of flack. He's had a lot of success against the Patriots. I mean, you think about what he did with the Broncos in 2015. Obviously, that was the year Peyton Manning was hurt, but they still managed to overcome a huge matchup against the Patriots in the AFC Championship game. I think if there's anyone who can scheme and use his defensive line appropriately, it's going to be Wade Phillips. That Pats offensive line is nothing to scoff at, though. I think it's going to be interesting to see who Wade Phillips is interested in probably moving to help out his front four and see if he's willing to give up a linebacker in coverage and potentially open up over the middle, help on the backside of downfield coverage. I'm really, really interested to see what Wade Phillips can scheme. I really like Wade Phillips. Not a fan of him when he was in Dallas. Go figure. Both of us being NFC East fans.
Right, indeed.
But if I think if any defensive coordinator right now in the game can figure out a way to slow Tom Brady, I think Wade Phillips is the guy that you would pick, honestly.
Yeah, I think it's a good call. It's going to be a really key matchup, the Belichick versus Wade Phillips dance, Patriots offense versus Rams defense. You know, on the point of linebackers, you know, helping out the defensive line, I think that's another thing to watch too with the Patriots side of the football, because Kyle Van Noy and Hightower, the Patriots linebackers, they have been used in sort of a hybridized linebacker defensive end role. So they're sometimes blitzing the quarterback, and they've had a lot of success when they do that. But where they have not had success is dropping back in coverage. I think one of the questions is, how effectively can Sean McVay scheme against that to A, protect Goff against blitzing Van Noy and or Hightower, but also to take advantage of those guys' weaknesses in coverage if they have to drop back and chase down a tight end or a wide receiver who's breaking free for a shallow slant across the middle?
Yeah, that actually kind of walks me into the big matchup that I wanted to watch. Not necessarily a one-on-one matchup, but kind of a one versus a secondary. We talk about this explosive Rams offense. Todd Gurley is not himself.
No,
I know
he's not.
Late in the season, no one is 100%, but Todd Gurley is far from the 100% guy we saw earlier in this season. I think the matchup we got to be watching are, can guys like Brandon Cooks get downfield, get Jared Goff an opportunity to heave that ball 15, 20 yards at a minimum, and really start breaking apart that, hopefully, from the Rams' perspective, that Patriots linebacking core, and expose that secondary.
Right.
I mean, you look at what Pat Mahomes was able to do against the Patriots. I mean, I know no one forgets that was an overtime game, but he was averaging about 10 yards per attempt against New England and really did it by having some huge throws downfield. I think the Rams have to adopt that methodology
there. Yeah, and that wasn't even because of Tyreek Hill. He actually had a really quiet game for Tyreek Hill standards. I think he had like 60 yards or something passing or receiving. So it's not even like Mahomes was just relying on the freakish speed of Hill. He was able to hit guys who were getting open way down the field. And I think you're right. If Goff can take advantage of that in the same way, that'll do something. On the Gurley point, I totally agree. He's absolutely not as healthy as he was, but I wonder if he can still be really useful in this game, perhaps even more useful than he would be against another opponent, because they can use him in these like sweep motions to spread the field.
yeah,
tire out the Patriots defensive line. And that's, I think, one of their weaknesses. Like, they're designed to stop the downhill runner, CJ Anderson, who's just going to plow through the middle for 3 or 4 yards. Like, the Patriots, I think, are well-equipped to do that. But if you mix it up with a Todd Gurley who can run to the side and spread the field, like I said, you know, in the sweep motions, I think you could maybe leverage some of that to and mix it up appropriately to get some extra yardage out of your running back. And then, and then, you know, basically force your linebackers to respect the sweep so that they are slower to drop back in coverage. And then you can exploit those downhill options a little bit more.
Well, and honestly, I think it's worth noting that we're not splitting hairs here, but at the same time, I would take a 70% Todd Gurley over about 25 other starting running backs in the NFL. That
right.
I think his presence alone, even though he's not going to be 100%, I think his presence alone, his ability to catch in the flats, those kind of 4 and 5 yard downfield, if he's not necessarily coming out of the backfield every time, but still getting out in space, exactly like you're saying, that is enough to distract the Patriots linebacking core. And I,
right.
Going back to what we were saying, I don't have faith in the Patriots secondary to necessarily be able to hang in man. I think they're going to have to play a lot of zone to try to prevent a lot of those deep downfield plays.
Yeah.
And a guy like Sean McVay, We've all debated the merits of Jared Goff, but I think Sean McVay is a good enough coach, and I think he is going to be able to scheme against that and set Jared Goff up for success.
I think a lot of this does come down to Jared Goff, you know, because he's a really talented guy. Obviously he was number one pick in his draft. Carson Wentz was number two. I'm glad that the Eagles got Wentz. I would rather have Wentz than Goff, but as I've been watching Goff in this postseason, I mean, that guy does seem to have ice in his veins, but at the same time, he's less consistent than you'd want to have for your quarterback in the Super Bowl. He has some stretches where he'll throw some passes on a set of downs where you're just like, what in the world was that, man? Yeah. And then he'll have other ones where he can hit a guy in stride 40 yards down the field. So I think consistency is key there, but a lot is going to come down to how well Goff can rein in his accuracy issues. This game, I think, will be incredibly close. And I think it could be the difference between, you know, one or two interceptions from either of the quarterbacks, really. So for that reason, ball security becomes really important. Accuracy, obviously, and hitting those downhill options. I mean, if they're open, if the Patriots secondary is surrendering a couple steps to guys who are 40 yards downfield, that's great. Then the next step of that is that Jared Goff has to hit them, right?
Yeah.
So I think a lot of it really comes down to Goff, not just how well Sean McVay can scheme, because we know that he can do that. The question is, how well can Goff take advantage of the opportunistic scheming that he'll have hopefully available to him?
Yeah, that's a great point. So I will eat a little crow here in that I'm never been a Jared Goff fanboy at all. But, you know, we're looking at what he's done this season and where he has been struggling in accuracy. It hasn't resulted in a lot of interceptions. It's just resulted right. in incomplete passes, which, I mean, incomplete passes aren't great, but they're a heck of a lot better than throwing a pick. And yeah, look at what
I think
did.
His tendency is to underthrow a ball, like into the ground, like vastly yeah. underthrow it versus sail it. And you'd much rather prefer the former because it's a lot harder to pick off a ball off the ground, you know?
Yeah. And think back to that Saints game. I mean, I know it was 26-23, but I don't think any of us remember that Saints game between them and the Rams in the NFC Championship as just an offensive slugfest. Right. But he still put up almost 300 yards, 297. He went 25 for 40, only threw one pick. I mean, he only had a passer rating of 83. But at the same time, he was under pressure a lot right. in that game, and his ability to not turn the ball over was huge.
Well, and I think it was a tale of two halves for Goff as well. And, you know, this is a point that Dan Orlovsky has made as well, because Dan Orlovsky, the ESPN football analyst, he's basically said that one of Jared Goff's virtues is he has a really short memory, just like a cornerback. He throws an interception, terrible set of downs, and then he goes right back out there as if nothing ever happened and is able to resume right where he left off. I think another thing I'd point out, though, in this game, you know, on the other side of the ball, Julian Edelman's one of the great Patriots postseason receivers, and I think watching him in the Chiefs game, he was really instrumental in that that comeback and then the overtime win on those shallow crossing routes. So I think for me, a question is, can Wade Phillips plan for that too and stop Julian Edelman from doing these shallow, like 10-yard crossing routes that Tom Brady can throw to all day, every day, to drive down the field in a must-win scenario?
Yeah, and I mean, scheming against Julian Edelman and Gronk, where I think we probably should have a quick conversation about Gronk's health. I think it's very, very interesting having to scheme against two guys who are so polar opposite and pull your defensive coverages in such different ways that that is such a hard thing to scheme against.
Yeah, I totally agree. We haven't talked at all about Tony Romo, but even if it won't affect the outcome of the game,
Stradamus,
I think it is worth talking about. Yeah, Romo Stradamus. You know, I was watching the Patriots-Chiefs game. I've been a fan of the Romo stuff all year, but I think especially in that Patriots-Chiefs game, he was at a whole other level entirely. It was really, really fun to listen to him. I mean, let me just actually play a little bit of Romo in that Chiefs-Patriots game at the end of the game, or close to the end of the game in the fourth quarter, when the Patriots needed to do some work.
Gronkowski out wide. They've got to get him. He's your guy when it's one-on-one. They finally got him. There he is.
On the top of the screen.
If he's doubled, you're going to throw inside right here to Edelman. You just look up there and pick him.
Here they come after Brady. He goes down the field to Gronk. Turns around, makes the catch. With 4 yards away from...
So that's just one example of one of the many times that Romo got a call right, but it was super cool to watch. I mean, he was making this game fun, and that's me as a football fan talking, which maybe doesn't say a whole lot, but I've heard lots of people comment on this who aren't football fans say that he's breaking down the game and making it relatable in a way that's great for non-football fans. And for football fans like you and me, he's helping us see the game in ways that we haven't before. So he's calling out formations and pointing out where players are lined up. And from that, he can divine essentially what's going to happen on the play. And that's exactly what happened there. He called out Gronk, who was lined up at the top of the formation. Edelman was there as a security blanket. And what happened? They went right to Gronk, just like Romo said that would probably happen. So it's super fun to watch. I'm excited. Hopefully we'll get more of this in the game itself. But I think this is a big night for Romo, obviously. You know, his first full year as an analyst, and he's calling the Super Bowl. That's pretty cool.
Totally agree. And you know, he's been great at predicting plays and breaking down formations. For me, it's not even just that. It is the passion he brings that I think could get away from him quite a few times. And I think that makes a lot of kind of your diehard football fans annoyed that he is so exuberant and not stoic at all times. He's clearly not showing a bias, but showing what excites him as a football fan and former football player.
Right.
And honestly, I think that is a breath of fresh air. Yeah. You know, if I want to hear what a specific team is doing from that team slant, I'll turn it over to their radio broadcast.
Sure.
And that's fine. But when I get the national feed, like, I want someone who's in it with me and tells me exactly, like you said, what I'm actually seeing on the field, what an offensive coordinator is trying to scheme against, how a defense is going to try to adapt to that. It's a lot of fun. And I know some people get annoyed at how much he yells into the microphone. I love it because it's like watching football with one of my friends.
Oh, yeah, exactly. You need to feel that enthusiasm that – it's contagious when the announcer has it. You love it. It makes you more excited about the game.
Yeah. Have you seen all these rumors about Tony Romo's getting calls about being a coach, and so CBS is having to pay him a lot more to keep him in it?
I honestly wouldn't be too surprised. I mean, it's clear from anyone who watches him that he really understands the game of football and he really loves it. And those, I think, are the two ingredients for a successful, well, two of the main ingredients for a successful coach. And so, I mean, I have to say, if I was an owner, I would be thinking, hey, Romo, are you interested in coaching? Like, let's bring you in here for an interview. Let's sit down and talk about it. So I can see why CBS wants to pay him a little bit more, because you want to keep that. You want to keep that in the booth.
Well, and I think Jim Nance, honestly, is one of the best play-by-play guys in sports, not just in football, but in sports. I love listening to him call college basketball games in March. So you've got the stoic Jim Nance, who is great, but who kind of gets egged on by Tony Romo.
Right,
and
right.
He and Tony are kind of going back and forth.
It's going to be fun.
This great rapport of kind of yin and yang.
Yeah.
I don't normally look forward to the broadcast team.
Same here, especially if it's ESPN Monday Night Football. It's probably the worst broadcast team.
That's a podcast I've in itself, ever, my friend.
Oh my goodness. We'll engage with that later. Peter, let's wrap up here, but let's do it with some predictions. So I'll ask you first, who is going to win this? And then the second question is, who's going to be the MVP?
So this is not who I'm rooting for, but what my gut is telling me, and my gut is telling me that the Patriots are not the underdog, that they're going to tell everyone they are.
Nobody believed in us, yada, yada, yada. Oh, my goodness. So ridiculous.
When they win, per usual, I don't know if you saw the thing out of Pittsburgh about the guy who put the banner bar below Tom Brady as known cheater, but it's going to be Tom Brady lying through his teeth saying we were underdogs and no one believed in him. But I expect the Patriots to win this 27-24 in a close game, just like we said. I think Gostkowski, their kicker, despite what the prop bets think, I don't think he's putting one off the uprights for the Super Bowl. I think he will be solid. And I think that the Rams are going to run out of horses against Tom Brady.
Man, I hope you're wrong, Pete.
Me too.
I really don't want to see another Patriots Super Bowl. Real quick though, on the you know, known cheater point, I got a text from or an Instagram meme from my brother-in-law that compares Jared Goff and Tom Brady. Jared Goff has never lost a Super Bowl. Tom Brady has lost 3 Super Bowls. Jared Goff only has 1 career playoff loss. Tom Brady has 10 career playoff losses. Jared Goff started Remember the Titans. Tom Brady was in Ted 2 for like 30 seconds. Jared Goff once named NFC Player of the Month. Tom Brady has never been named NFC Player of the Month. Yeah, on and on. You get the picture. Yeah, it's not that people doubted the Patriots. It's that everyone wanted the Patriots to lose. There's a difference, and the Patriots players don't understand that.
They love being the villains. I mean,
it's ridiculous.
I know that the people of Boston, the people in New York would be appalled at hearing me say this, but they're the Yankees of football.
They are, absolutely. There's no doubt. There's no question.
They're the evil empire, just like the Yankees are. They can scout talent well. They're willing to pay for it. Yeah. And when they are done with you, they are done with you, and they don't hang on to you too long. They love being the villains. Bill Belichick loves being the villain.
Oh, no doubt.
And you know what? More power to him.
He just throws up his hoodie like Darth Maul. Throws up that hood. Did you have an MVP prediction? Did I miss that?
I'm actually going with a guy we talked about earlier, Julian Edelman. I think, despite what you think about the Patriots, Julian Edelman is a great athlete who he's been in the trenches for the Patriots for so long, and he's just done some incredible things. I think Julian Edelman catching a couple passes over the middle, yards after the catch, getting out in space and running after initial contact is going to be the difference maker for that Patriots offense.
I think that's a good call as far as the performance on the field. I think, though, that if the Patriots win, it'll be Tom Brady getting MVP again, fulfilling the Goodell Kraft Brady narrative. I'm going to go the other way on my prediction, though, Pete. Maybe it is just wishful thinking. Maybe I'm just being naive. It's not that I'm doubting the Patriots. I guess you could say I'm expecting them to win, but I think I'm going to go and predict the other way. I'm going to say Rams win 27-24. It's going to be a really close game. But I think going back to the very first key to the game, I mentioned Aaron Donald versus the Pats offensive line. I think if the Rams do win, it's not going to be because Jared Goff plays lights out. It's not going to be because Todd Gurley rushes for 200 yards. I think it's going to be because Aaron Donald can get home in his pass rush and, you know, have 2 sacks and several knockdowns and hits and whatnot. But I think we're going to see Aaron Donald as the MVP. Maybe a strip sack and return that for a touchdown, pick up the fumble. But I think we'll see Aaron Donald as the MVP in a Rams 27-24 victory.
I love it. Hey, can you remember a Super Bowl where we talk about the coaches as much as we have this year? I know that you and I are fans of Sean McVay. No one's a fan of Bill Belichick, but he's a fantastic coach. It is very interesting that opposed to every other year, I mean, I even think back to your Eagles last year.
Right.
Everyone just always assumed that Bill Belichick was going to outcoach everyone he ever saw.
Doug Peterson wasn't really a conversation until the Philly special. And then it was like, oh, wow, yeah. Doug Peterson's a really good coach because he did the Philly special, which, you know, is another conversation entirely. But, you know, probably vastly overblown. I do think Doug Peterson's a good coach, but, you know, I think media sees on that moment as like, oh, wow, he's a great coach. I agree with you, though. I mean, Sean McVay, I think, is the heir apparent. There's been this, like, you know, young regime versus old regime narrative going into this that Bill Belichick is in a way handing off the torch to Sean McVay. I think Sean McVay is a great coach. I think that he has really talented players to work with in a front office who has given him all the resources he needs to be successful. So that's not to take anything away from him, but that's just to say that I think, you know, the guy's so young. He hasn't been in the league long. I think the jury's still out on what type of career he'll have. So I think anointing him prematurely is not the best move right now. But you're right. I mean, normally there isn't this media circus about the coaches. I mean, think back to Belichick versus the Falcons. Like, there was never a Dan Quinn versus Bill Belichick narrative, right? Like, nobody cared about that. So I think we are maybe making a little bit too much of the McVay-Belichick angle in this. But, you know, that's for another conversation, I guess. Maybe we'll be proven wrong and we'll see a chess match for the ages tomorrow night. But we'll see.
I hope so. You know, we were fortunate in Washington, and you look at when we were successful, it was when Sean McVay was on our sideline, and he came up early in that system, and they were talking about him in 2010, 2011, when he took over as the quarterback's coach, as being a guy who just really got through to the young guys. And at that time, he was coaching his peers more than anything else. I mean, he's the same age as Julian Edelman. You look at those hilarious pictures.
That's pretty amazing.
Of the two of them in college. We knew that we had someone special. We knew in Washington we were in trouble when he walked. But I think he's outperformed any expectation anyone had for him. So it's been refreshing because I think we're all tired of talking about Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. It's
refreshing
to have something on the other side. But yeah, we'll see how this quote unquote chess match works. I'm hoping it's a chess match.
Yeah, me too.
I'm hoping he doesn't get outcoached, but we'll see.
Yeah. Well, anything else to add, Pete, before we wrap it up here?
I'm excited for a Super Bowl. It's hard to believe it's been a year since you and I did an emergency pod after the Eagles beat the Patriots last year. So what a year it's been. Who knows what we'll do tomorrow night.
Oh, man. Yeah, well, good luck to all of our listeners watching the Super Bowl. Hopefully you have an enjoyable game. I'm not sure if you'll be happy or sad, depending on the outcome. But I think Pete and I will be happy if the Rams win. Certainly less so if the Patriots end up on top again. But we'll see. Good luck to all our listeners. It is going to be on CBS this year, hence the remote broadcasting. Kickoff time at 6:30 Eastern, right, Pete?
Yes. Well, ish, depending on how long Gladys Knight sings for.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. And you're taking the over on that, right? Over a minute and 50 seconds. All right, good. Absolutely. Well, Pete, thanks so much for jumping on with me here. To our listeners, thanks for listening to Third String Podcast. Great to be back. And hopefully you have a great rest of your weekend.